Okay, let's go back to Proverbs this morning. This is the last Sunday to talk about what we've been talking about fear. And spent a pretty good amount of time talking about, you know, the place that fear doesn't really have in a Christian's life. No, it's supposed to not have anyway. And the fear of man versus the fear of the Lord. Now this week, we're going to cover what the fear of the Lord is. We talked last week about what fear will make you. And then this week, we're going to talk about the fear of the Lord. What it will give you. What it provides. There's so much more that could be said about this part of it. Because, look, I mean, man in his godless state, I mean, I think we can look around and see a whole lot more examples of what there's a lot more of them than there are of the other. And that's the plight of the human condition. You look around and the evil that's in the world and the sadness and the sorrow and the hurt and the suffering and everything that comes along with living after the flesh and in a godless condition. You know, it's really sad. You know, all the prayer requests we talk about and the people we know and our lost relatives and kids and brothers and sisters and family and the woes that come upon them in life and how that it can all be traced back to the fact that God's not a part. I mean, God's not a part of it. There's no comfort for them to be had, even in the hardships that come along in life, because there's no God. And you look at that, and, you know, their life is completely consumed by the fear of man. It's guided by their fears. You hear little kids, it's so funny. He's not here, so I'll talk about Lucas, you know, and his it's almost like pre-programmed or like subliminally programmed fears that he has. You know, we told him we're getting a dog, right? Finally, after all this time, we're getting a dog. And so Christmas Day, we was up there at Mom and Dad's, and the Maddie come in and she said, Lucas, guess what we're getting? We're getting a puppy. We're getting a dog. And he goes, really? Oh, I'm scared of dogs. Like, that was his immediate knee-jerk reaction, was like, puppy! Oh, wait, I'm scared of dogs. And he said, Mom, I'm scared of dogs. And he went to walk out to the van. Gary said, go get in the van, boy. And he walked out going down the steps, and he stopped, and he said, carry me, I'm scared of the dark. Well, the van was sitting right there, and the lights was all on, but it was dark outside. And, you know, he started to do it, but then, oh, no, I'm scared of the dark. It's like, his poor little mind, he is completely controlled. Like, his fears dictate what he's going to do, what he's going to like. But, and he's a little bitty. I mean, don't get me wrong. But as silly as that seems to watch a little child be afraid of things it's not to be afraid of, people grow up and live their entire life guided by their fears. And we've talked about that all month long. So I want to talk about the fear of the Lord today. Be in Proverbs chapter 14. We're going to read verse 26 and 27. And then I'll have one other verse to read. At the end. It's in Isaiah chapter 26. Proverbs 14 verse 26 says, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence, and his children shall have a place of refuge. Verse 27, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, to depart from the snares of death. And then in Isaiah chapter 26 verse 3, very familiar verse, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Verse 4 says, trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. And so let's just talk, I mean, very simple outline. It's come right from the scripture we read. First thing it says there in Proverbs 14, 26, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence. I was sitting there studying some this morning, and Jason Pell messaged me and just seeing how things was going. He's trying to keep, you know, we're trying to keep up with each other a little bit more here lately than we have in the past years. And it's good to get to talk to him and stuff. But it was funny because we was talking about something. He seen a picture of me. That's what you post, the picture you posted with me and all my red flannel, right? So he was ripping on me a little bit there. He's like, "Oh, you're looking real good in all your flannel shoes and shirt." And I said, "Well, you didn't see my cup and my that all mess." I said, "Well, it's just I don't really do it on purpose. I've been doing that since before it was cool, I guess." But I don't know. It's why do people follow after fashions and are so blown about by even the way they speak, the lingo they use, the verbiage, like the vernacular that you see the young people do it. But it's kind of like when you see young people do that, and it's like, you know, that's what young people do. They use all of the same words and everything that all their peers are using. But how shameful is it to see an adult, like an older person, that's trying to dress like a younger person, or they try to use words and language and speak like the hip young people. And it sounds ridiculous when the young people do it already, okay? Shortening words and saying things that, you know, I don't know. It's so annoying to me, you know. Mm-hmm. Totes, adorbs, and we say that as a joke or whatever, but there's people that really do. They've dumbed down the language to the point where they don't even use complete words. And it becomes trendy because it's what everybody else is doing. And so that's why they do it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like what I've said about some other things going on nowadays. They're only doing it because it's what everybody else is doing. And it seems it's so shameful. It's ridiculous when you see kids doing it. It's shameful when you see adults doing it. But that's what do you think the fashion world is all about? You know? Why is it not cool this year to wear this, but next year it will be? You know, why do you think that for all the years they've made fun of hillbillies and mountain folks and everything else, and now it's the cool thing to be, you know, the hipsters have made the lumberjack thing come back. But little footnote here. You can always pick those out from the real ones because real mountain men don't wear skinny jeans. Mm-hmm. And they wear socks with their shoes, just saying. And their pants come all the way down on their shoes. They don't ride up above their ankles like their mom's capri pants. One of these days I'm going to preach a whole message about why you shouldn't wear gay clothes. Yeah. I'm serious. Our churches are full of men and boys getting up claiming to be Christians, and they dress like homosexuals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Because that's where they're getting all their fashion sense from. Mm-hmm. Because they only get their confidence from the fear of being rejected by that group of people. They don't care what God's people think about them. They care about what the world thinks about them. And that's why they don't have strong confidence, because they don't fear the Lord. Fear of the Lord gives you strong confidence. You can wear a feed sack and not be ashamed. So I've tried to make my girls understand, look, you know, who cares what those people say about the way you dress? It matters what the Lord thinks. I mean, shouldn't your motivation be the fear of the Lord? I fear Him because I love Him. I want to please Him with my life. That's why for years now, and this affected me when I was a kid. I remember trying to look like everybody else because that was the thing. And I remember Dad saying, "What in the world's wrong with you, boy?" Well, that was what was wrong with me. I didn't fear the Lord. I feared men. So that's why I wanted to be just like them, for fear that they would reject me if I didn't. Nonconformists are all the same. There's strong confidence in being able to stand up against fashion or worldly trends. What about friendships and relationships, or the lack of? We've talked about that. I think I might have spoke on that last week about friends and all of that. And, you know, strong confidence lets you be able to stand out there alone, because you're not really alone. Who cares if them people ain't with you? They're not with you anyway. They're only there, kind of like the prodigal you was talking about, as long as you've got something to offer them, as long as you benefit them in some way. That's that. And when that runs out, they're gone. They move on to the next, you know, source. They're parasitic that way. And they'll move on when you don't have nothing else, and there you'll be. Strong confidence, taking a stand on the truth. You can stand alone if you're grounded in the truth. Your confidence comes from the fear of the Lord and in the truth of His Word. And you can do that. You can stand alone because you're right. There's nothing more sad than to see someone who's trying to take a stand on what they're calling the truth, when in all reality, they're standing on quicksand because it's not grounded in the truth. And they think it is. And you ever see somebody that'll double down when you call them out on it and say, hey, you know, what you're standing on is quicksand. And they'll double down. It's real sad. Their confidence is not in the fear of the Lord. They're trying to fake it, but it's not strong confidence. You have strong confidence in God Himself to accomplish His purpose in you through your obedience to His Word and the truth. I mean, He's trustworthy. And so, in the fear of the Lord, the strong confidence you can have is just in Him alone. I mean, think about it. The Lord has taught me some lessons through the last 10 years or so about, you know, one of the things I always had a real problem with, you know, I struggled with, as far as fear goes, is, you know, money stuff. Made a lot of real bad decisions with my money and not managing it right, not being a good steward of what the Lord had given me, even back in them days. And so I always was concerned, you know, and it plays into it what other people think about you too. You know, I was more concerned about people thinking that I was, I don't want to say poor, but just a, you know, dumb with my money. That I was so worried about it that I was dumb with my money. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Made really dumb choices trying to make people think that I didn't make dumb choices. How dumb is that, right? Well, it was because my confidence was in other things besides the Lord. When I finally took my hands off of it and said, Lord, I'll do what you want me to do. And I won't worry about this part no more. You're just going to have to take care of that. And I had faith in Him and I trust Him. Honestly, I honestly can say this sincerely. I don't worry about that no more. I don't spend any time worrying about if I'm going to have enough money to pay my bills. Now, there's a lot of times I heard a guy tell me the other day. He's like, man, I ain't, you know, we're in a spot, pretty tight spot right now. He said, we ain't got hardly no money because I give a bunch over to Wettis. Felt like the Lord wanted me to give somebody and help somebody out, and I did it. And he said, man, we ain't got but about $1,500 in our checking account right now. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, man, $1,500, that's way up in the black for me. I mean, I'm if I can carry $1,500 in the checking account all the time, I am golden, man. We can do good. But, you know, I don't know. I just don't think about it much anymore because I have had way down in the red before, and right at the very last moment, the Lord just covered it. He just took care of it time and time and time and time again. So many times I can't tell you how many times, to the point where I know I can trust Him. I don't even worry about it. Mm-hmm. Just don't worry about it. He'll take care of those things. He'll take care of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one way or another.
Sure will.
I mean, He'll just take care of it. And I can have strong confidence in His faithfulness because He never, mm-hmm. never lets me down. And, you know, another thing it provides is the second part of that verse. It says, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence, and His children shall have a place of refuge. Place of refuge. From what? Well, from the fears of life, the unknown and the unpredictable. I still think about this, and especially right now with the political climate of how everything is right now going on and our farce of an electoral system and electoral process and what it's produced. And that's the talk. That's the talk. Everybody's worried about two things, COVID and who's going to be president next. And the stimulus. Can't forget three things. The stimulus. The status of the stimulus. And what a joke. You know, think about if you didn't have the Lord to trust in and lean on and not have fear because knowing that He's in control. Think, well, just look out the window and look at the people that you know that are literally just, they are at the point of almost like a mental breakdown over anxiety and fear of what they don't know. Mm-hmm. There ain't anything that you or I, or by the way, anybody on the internet or any of these videos we watch or the news or any kind of politician or financial advisor or anything that can predict to you what's going to happen with the election, with the stimulus, with the COVID or any of this. They can't. They can't. You can search till you're exhausted looking for an answer so you can have some direction and know what to do. Because that's what we're all wondering. You know, how do we prepare for this? What are we, you know, everybody's buying guns and buying bullets and buying iodine for the nuclear fallout and buying, you know, food storage and all this, which all those things is not foolish, but at the same time, if you put all your trust in that, you are a fool. Because everybody's heart is disquieted within them, just like the children of Israel were, because they don't fear the Lord. They don't have a place of refuge in being able to trust the Lord. And as Christians, we do. And I think we don't avail of ourselves. We don't avail ourselves of that place of refuge as much as we can, as much as we could, because the noise of the world and their fear is too loud. It's what we allow into our lives. Well, we have a place of refuge from those who wound and tear apart and subtract from us. I think we've all had people and have people in our life that, for whatever reason, we don't really know why, can't really say why, but they just don't like you. They don't like you, and they don't like your kind, and they don't like what you represent. That really is what it is. They don't have nothing good to say about you, and you ain't never done anything to them but good in their life. I have a hard time with that sometimes. That's one of the things that personally I struggle with, because the world and evil men, they return evil for good. And when you get tread upon or lied about or used by people who have no concern for you, they don't love you. You know, that's what's so hard about someone who leaves the fold and goes out there. It's one of the things that's the hardest for them to overcome is to admit, you know, I've done you wrong. That's what the prodigal said when he come home. I've sinned against you and against heaven, and I'm no longer worthy. That's one of the things you got to admit when you come back to God, is that you've not just sinned against him. It's the people you've hurt along the way and stepped on and took advantage of and lied to and abused. That's a hard thing for me sometimes to keep in context, is that as a Christian, how are you going to offer anybody a place of refuge if you can't offer some forgiveness for having been taken advantage of? Because that's one of the things that is, it's kind of like a prerequisite to being a Christian, is you got to be willing to be, what is the phrase it says? Willing to be, what did Paul say?
Spent.
Well, there's another one that he says, I'll think of it later maybe. But it's willing to be taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. And it's a defrauded. Defrauded. Yeah. And even in that word itself, there's more of a, it's like a heavier punch. It's not just being like, you know, being used to catch a ride from here to there, or no, defrauded is when you're lied about, you're stolen from, you're disparaged and taken advantage of and thrown away all at one whack. And no one cares. That's what it means. And you got a place of refuge in the fear of the Lord against succumbing to the feelings that brings out in you. I mean, who in here likes to be done that way? Well, none of us, of course not. And a lot of times, if, you know, boy, when I ask the Lord for help, it's in these matters more than just about anything, to help me keep the right spirit towards the people who don't deserve it. Because I didn't deserve it either, and I still don't. But somebody did it for me, and the Lord always has done it for me. So it's a place of refuge from those who want to take from you. It's a place of refuge in helping you see and identify and avoid the things that would destroy you. I mean, as Christians, we're not called to just be willing to blindly walk into disaster. I mean, the Lord, there's all kinds of, I mean, he warned Abraham, didn't he? Or was it? I'm trying to think. My mind's messed up here. I'm trying to think of in Hebrews where, well, he warned Noah about the flood that was coming. He warned Mary and Joseph about Herod that was trying to kill the babies. There's all kinds of instances where he warned his people, hey, don't go that way. There's danger there. And then they were able to avoid disaster just in the nick of time. There's refuge to avoid things. And to have some discernment about what you should listen to and let into your life that brings in a spirit of fear with it and plagues you. Verse 27 says, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. Fear of the Lord is a fountain of life. That sounds pretty vague, but at the same time, think about it. It gives you a real life, both here and in the future of eternity as well. There's nothing more discouraging, or how can I say, not discouraging, it's almost laughable to see someone that claims to be a Christian, but they're always sad, and they're always dejected, and they're always forlorn, and they're always depressed, and they're always sad, and like crying poor mouth all the time. I've seen people that have everything, every reason in the world to just be what I just said. And you'd never know they were going through anything because the fear of the Lord in them is a fountain of life. They're always, what they bring to the table gives to everyone around them and brings everybody up. And in all honesty, they need picking up worse than anybody in the room. But you wouldn't know it because the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life flowing out of them. And it gives to everybody. We could probably all name people we've known in our life that are like that. And also name people in our life that are on the other end of the spectrum that are like, oh no, don't ask her how she's doing today because you're going to get hung up. But then, I don't know, I've known people that they're just a blessing to be around because they always... You know they don't have anything, but they always have something to give you. And I'm not talking about something like a gift. I'm talking about just something that you walk away feeling encouraged by having been around them today. And they don't have anything except you know that they fear the Lord. And they've been that way for so long that it produces something out of them that other people don't have. It's a fountain of life. It gives you a bona fide identity. That's an old word, bona fide. But it means legitimate. It means, it's kind of like it gives the implication that it's kind of like papered. You know what I mean? Like it's a certificate of authenticity. You know, that's what the whole wide world is pushed about by their fears looking for. You ever thought about that? Fashion and what I talked about earlier or whatever. Identity. That's what me and Jason was talking about this morning, how it's so funny. He said, there's this lady in their church, and he said, you can always tell what is trending this week by what outfit she's wearing. And one week, she's a mountain climber because she's got Patagonia and all this, you know, North Face and all this kind of stuff. And then the next week, she's this. And the next week, she spends all her money on clothes to keep up with that because... It's about looking for an identity. One week she's a mountain biker, and the next week she's a mountain climber, and the next week she's this, and the next, you know what I'm saying? And it's, we know people like that. And if we're not careful, that's what it'll be, our motivation for what we are and what we do and our likes and dislikes and all this stuff, that's what it'll be for. It's just looking for an identity. You know, some camp to identify with. It's really sad. It's really sad. Because the fear of the Lord being a fountain of life gives you an identity. You know, I struggled with this a lot when I was younger, when I was a teenager and into my early 20s and stuff. I was whatever group of people I was with, that's what influenced me to be what I was or what I was trying to be. And it wasn't, there were some things I took part of that I had no pleasure in whatsoever, but I did it because I didn't want to not fit in with the people that I thought mattered in my life. It's an age-old story of peer pressure or whatever, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's a choice you make, you know, to be this or be that or dress this way or dress that way or go here or go there, looking for this identity and people to identify with. And when I got saved, I gave up on all that because I identify with Christ. That's who I want to identify with. I want the world to look at me and know I'm with Him.
Yep.
I represent Him. As a Christian, that's what you're supposed to be being anyway. That's why your clothes matter. Mm-hmm. That's why your speech matters. That's why your entertainment matters. That's why your likes and the things, your interests and your hobbies even, and the things you spend your time doing, that's why it matters. You know, the whole wide world, in as far as churches go, it seems like anymore, they spend more time trying to justify identifying with the world and finding a way in the Bible to defend that position than they do trying to just identify with the Lord and His people. They're trying to redefine what His people are supposed to represent and what that's supposed to even look like, or disparage what it always has looked like in the past, than just putting some effort into identifying with the kingdom of heaven and with God. I want them to look at me and know there's something different. That's why I don't want to dress like them no more. That's why I don't dress like them no more. And I'm not, and I don't know. We all know people that, whether, for whatever reason or another, whether, no matter who they are, it's a character trait that's admirable in all the way across the board in every genre of life, or is that somebody, they don't change. You know, that they're just all, they've always, as long as I've ever known that guy, he's been just like that. He's dressed just like that. He's always been that right there. Well, how much more effective is it if somebody can know that about you and the way you live for the Lord and the way you want to identify with Him, the way you represent the Lord? See, that's what we need to always remember, is that whatever's coming out of us represents who we are trying to identify with. And that fountain of life, if you're a Christian, is supposed to be pointing to Him. And it's the identifier that tells people what's in you and what's in me. I don't know. I used to have a hard time understanding even the matter of modesty and what that means, because it's been preached to death from every viewpoint that there is, but at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to. You represent Him by even how you dress. Mm-hmm. And so if you look like them, then how are they going to know that you're with Him? They're not. And it must be consistent all the time, you know, because I promise you, the way the devil works is that the one time you don't, there'll be somebody there that sees you that really matters.
Yep.
And then it's gone. All the ground you've gained, everything you claim, it's gone. That's your testimony. It's gone. And that fountain of life, it ain't there. It just ain't there. And the people that are going to see it are the ones that's going to matter most too. That fountain of life that's supposed to be coming out of you because you fear the Lord, them people out there that are watching you and watching our life, They can see it when it's fake. They know. I talked to a guy last week, come by my shop, and we were talking about church, and I don't know. Look, it's hard for me anymore because the push from so many churches is just, that's something else I'm going to preach a message on one of these days, that the church doesn't have a union. God didn't intend for the church to be unionized. And I'm talking about like the signs people have in their front yard that says proud union family. Church ain't supposed to be that way. Christianity is not that way. But everybody propagates their church as if that's what it is. They try to give you all of the positive reasons why you ought to be part of our club. So that's not the first thing I do when I meet somebody and talk to them about the Lord, or if it gets on that subject, is try to get them to come to our church. You know, everybody else does. That's what this guy's problem was, is that he's like, man, I'm trying to find a church to go to, but I just, he said, I have done this long enough to where I'm always wary of the first few people that want me to come to their church. He said, that's a red flag for me. That's the church I don't want to go to, because he said it's going to be the fullest of problems for me and my family. And I said, well, doggone it, you're not wrong. And why? Well, because they can smell a rat a mile away. They're not sold to the hypocrisy that is the identity of your church. See, because that's not what Christianity is either, is just your church being your identity. God's supposed to be that. And most people don't have Him, they just have church. So that's where they pour all of their effort into. It's not a fountain of life, it's fake. Gives you an identity. It gives you an earthly purpose and reason for living. That's not determined by the things that the world puts value on. That fountain of life. And lastly, it gives you perfect peace. It gives you a life free from feeling the pressure to have to be concerned with being embraced by the world based on whether or not you pass muster with them. Kind of what we talked about. Everybody doing everything they do and everything they can and spending all their money and time and effort trying to make those folks accept you like one of them, when you're supposed to be being different than them and making them realize that, hey, the hog pen is not where you're supposed to be. The hog pen is not, it offers you nothing. It's took everything from you and it offers you no kind of peace. But instead, most people spend all their time looking over the fence, wishing those people didn't think you were such a heel for not being in the hog pen with them. You don't get your peace from knowing they're okay with you. It gives you perfect peace in knowing that the Lord not only is trustworthy, but He will forever honor your trust in Him by always leading you in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. You got to remember this. He knows that they're watching you to see what kind of guy He is, to see what kind of God He is. I mean, don't you think that there are people that are watching our life and our faith in Him to see if He's trustworthy or not? I mean, we are His epistles written in flesh, right? That's the, you know, you've heard it said, you're the only Bible the world's ever going to read, some people are ever going to read, or something like that. That's how it goes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're watching us for. It ain't just to see how faithful we are to Him. It's to see how faithful He is for us. Yeah. And the way that you live and I live a Christian life, and the things that we fear or the way we trust Him and don't fear, are going to tell them whether or not it's going to be what makes the decision for them more often than not. When they can see you sail off into uncharted, rough waters or go through something horrible, and everybody knows it, but they see you still being that fountain of life and it coming out of you, and they know, how in the world is this person doing that? How in the world are they able to? Well, it's because of He that's within us, see? Perfect peace in the middle of a place where there is no peace. Just like He was on that boat when all the disciples were fearing for their life and He was asleep in a storm. You know. And He said, why? Why are you so fearful? Have ye no faith? Faith in what? Well, in Him. The fear of the Lord. There's perfect peace. in helping you. There's perfect peace in helping you to live with confidence in the knowledge and discernment of what's right and wrong. I've said that already, but man, that is the issue you run into when you talk to other people about what religion, if you want to call it that. That's a pretty generic term, but I'm talking about what the Bible says about things, or what your church teaches about things, or what, you know, just talking about the Lord in general. And I see people that are not confident in being able to discern what's right or wrong, and they're trying to help people. And one day they think this is wrong, but if they're talking to somebody else and they put to them a challenge on what they believe, you'll see them crawfish and it's... I watched a thing one time about seabirds, and it's these big pelicans and different, you know, albatrosses and great big birds that sail around, and they glide, and it looks like it's so effortless, but any little bobble in their aerodynamics and they're done. I mean, they fall all to pieces. It was a documentary on how they prey on like a peregrine falcon. They'll try to rob its nest and eat the eggs. Well, the falcon knows it, and here they'll see them birds sailing across through there, and that falcon will dive out of the air, and it showed them in slow motion, and this falcon flew down and he grabbed that pelican by the end of his beak and just throwed his head up in the air with his talons. He just grabbed him and throwed his head, and it messed up the aerodynamics of that bird. And in a split second, he was just a ball of feathers just falling out of the sky, and he almost couldn't. Some of them hit the water because all they had to do is just bobble them just a little bit, and they fell all to pieces because they looked like they were real strong flyers. But that falcon knew all I got to do is just mess them up because they're not strong. They're just big, and they just look like they know what they're doing. And for a lot of people that claim to know the Lord and have peace, perfect peace with Him in the fear of the Lord, the devil knows if you're faking it. And he knows your weak points. And I don't know. You can have confidence in knowing what's right and wrong by fearing the Lord and walking in His statutes. And as well as being able to distinguish with confidence between what is temporal and what is eternal. What's going to only last for a brief moment here in this earthly world, this earthly kingdom, and what will be with you and last for all eternity. I don't know. There's a lot of things that I see people waste their life pursuing, thinking that they're doing something for the Lord, and it's just a waste of time. Because they are still, the fear of man still has a place in their life and in their mind and in their heart because of the things they let themselves be influenced by. And they spend a lot of their life exerting a lot of effort and energy trying to live in perfect peace, but it's just not there. It's like this unicorn that can't never seem to quite find. They almost get there, and then but it just ain't there for them. And when things are okay, they can fake it pretty good, but when things get tough, they ain't got perfect peace. And the fear of the Lord will help you have some wisdom about this, and it all comes from His Word. It's all right here. I was talking to Anna last night, and that's what I said. You know, she always seems to preface when we're talking about these, well, I know I've never did this before, but, you know, and I've never done this before, and I've never had this, or I've never been this before, but I, you know, and it's always about the truth. And that's what I told her. I said, listen, don't second guess the confidence that God can give you through the truth. You know, if you're standing on the truth of what the Bible says about a certain subject, it don't matter if you've ever experienced it or not in your life. You can with confidence stand on God's word and try to help somebody else find the truth, even if you've not ever had to go through that in your life before. I've heard people talk about it and say, you know, a preacher shouldn't preach on raising kids unless he's raised all his and they're all raised right. Yeah, that's not true. No. Yeah, the Bible says what it says about raising kids, and that's the truth. And you can preach it even if it condemns you. And, you know, if that was the case, then there'd be a whole lot of people shouldn't be teaching anything about anything, because ain't none of us been successful in a whole lot of things. But you can have perfect peace and confidence in what the Lord says in His Word about anything. And know the difference between what don't matter, that's just temporal in this earth, and what is eternal and what has eternal value. If your mind is stayed on Him, that's what He says, thou shalt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. The fear of the Lord, it's a good way to be, it's a good way to live, and it's the right place to be, for sure. Amen.